Min campus al ihor. Miaj Karsten Schwine.
Nilqakom għat-tielet sens ila tal-programm minn Campus Liħor fuq Campus FM miegħi Karsten Xwiereb. Din it-tielet sens ila b'sad tkompli fuq l-ewwel tnejn, jiġifieri kull ġimgħa niltaqa' ma' xi ħadd illi jirrakkontalna ftit l-iżvilupp tal-karriera tal-professjoni tiegħu jew tagħha u jgħidilna ftit mhux biss b'mod tekniku dan l-iżvilupp professjonali. Iżda anki b'aneddoti personali, ċertu drabi anki stejjer simpatiċi u fuq kollox elementi mużikali natu iktar lewn lil dawn l-esperjenzi li jitqasmu magħna. Nirringrazzja dejjem l-semija tagħna tar-respons li jituni biex dejjem inħarsu lej aspetti differenti ta' dawn il-mistednin li jkolli fil-programm u nħor opportunità biex nerġa' nirringrazzja lil ARC Consultancy peress li jipprovdulna il-mużika ta' Medinea fil-bidu u fit-tmiem dan il-programm. Il-mistiedna tal-lum ħad gost n-intervista l-Amy Fullman ta' nazzjonalità Amerikana minn Virginia, ħabiba antika u kont kontent li ftit tażmin ilu kienet Malta propju nixxiela id-dur ftit kollegi tagħha l-Ewropa inkluż hawnhekk. L-Università ta' Malta fil-qasam tal-Politika Kulturali u l-Management Artistiku u tajna fil-studio ta' Awek Campus FM ġew l-Università Malta propju biex nitħattu ftit u insegu ftit l-iżvilupp tal-karriera tagħha. Amy bħalissa hija Director National Resource Center for Creative Forces dak huwa t-titlu propju tagħha fiħdan il-National Endowment for the Arts fis-sezzjoni tal-Military Healing Arts Network għal-Gvern Amerikana. U ħatejdilna ftit kif wieħed jassoċja d-dinja artistika, speċjalment mill-lat terapeutiku mad-dinja tal-militar, mad-dinja, tal-armata Amerikana. Il-karriera ta' Amy fil-qasam tal-politika kulturali u l-management artistiku kellha ħafna x'taqsam max-xena internazzjonali, dik diplomatika, dak li sejjaħ cultural engagement u kif ħan nisimgħu mill-istorja tagħha stess, kellha anki esperjenzi fil-vanzi nofsani fej b'xi mod kibret l-esperjenza tagħha anke fil-qasam tal-Vant Nofsani tal-Mediterran u anke permezz ta' xogħol ieħor li għamlet anke għal entitajiet oħrajn bħal pereżempju British Council jew Canadian Heritage. Baqgħet tagħmel xogħol fuq livell internazzjonali li wassal anke biex tagħmel xogħol ta' riċerka ta' consultancy ta' rapportaġġ ta' taħriġ ukoll capacity building għal entitajiet internazzjonali bħal UNESCO. Ħa nisimgħu minn għandha wkoll l-isfond tagħha artistiku jmur lura sewwa sew sa tfulita meta kienet tistudja u tipprattika l-danza u minn hemmhekk kif ġieli nisimgħu minn dawn ir-rakkont ti wieħed jibda jara anki forsi mħabba affarijiet li jinqalgħu fil-ħajja personali kif jibqa' fil-qasam anki jekk pereżempju ma jipprofessjonalizzax fil-aspett performattiv ta' arti partikolari. U fil-każ tagħha Amy Fullman propju għamlet dan sakemm waslet anki biex għamlet żmien fej tallem, tkun tutor u tigwida studenti kemm Amerikani kif ukoll internazzjonali ġewwa il-programm tal-Arts Management ġewwa George Mason University l-Amerika fej kienet anki għamlet ftit snin bħala assistent ta' professura. Ejja ngħaddu għall-intervista lura ma' Amy Fullman u nisimgħu ftit kont taħħa.
Hello,
So we're back to the interview section of today's program in Campus Alihor, here on Campus FM with me, Karsten Schwierup, and my guest, Dr. Amy Fullman. Amy, I'm really happy to have you with me in the studio, even physically, today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Karsten.
Our listeners will have heard already from my introduction in Maltese during this program, which is the first of the third series. So we're going strong, listening to many voices, many experiences, as we were chatting before in preparing for the program. Many of our listeners sort of look out for different things. Maybe the personal story, maybe the professional story. Sometimes even as a way of inspiration. Sometimes even as a way of, I think the word I used before we were chatting was of consoling. In Maltese we have this nice word which is whence, which is sort of knowing that a career path, a professional path, obviously going hand in hand with personal experiences as we grow older, as we maybe diversify in what we're doing, is rarely a straight line. It's often very meandering, and there are choices that come up and options, and one has to calculate sort of this way or that way. And in your personal and professional life, and we've known each other now for quite a few years. In fact, you're here in Malta while traveling, sort of moving through the borders and the boundaries of the pandemic, which still goes on slowly, traveling from the US to Europe, catching up, networking, doing different things. We were also lucky to have an Arts Council Malta event, which we managed to do together. But during these even years of conversation now, with me and with colleagues from all over the world, as we'll hear, this seems to be a central point, the sort of the moving, the not stopping, the not settling, stationary, sedentary in one place, but actually being all the time on a wave, and using this flow to see where things grow and where things develop. Would you say that's a fair assessment to start off with?
A very fair assessment. And that sense of flow, I think, is something that I've really tried to embrace, because perhaps in my mind it would have been, it would be different. But I think that balance and that weaving both between personal and professional, and also, you know, the sense of where your roots, where sometimes it's not always the place where you're meant to grow at that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to be really conscious, as I've also been really privileged to have these opportunities to have really deep and meaningful relationships with people all over the world, as well as at home.
Mm-hmm. Amy, let's start off at the beginning. This program sort of follows quite this format, which is fairly simple, fairly straightforward, of trying to follow the chronology of a professional path and see how things grew and developed or changed. Where would you root? You already used the word roots yourself. Where would you root of somehow your first steps in the various things you do and you have done, but somehow always related to the field of sort of creativity, human interaction, trying to find systems that work for people rather than the other way around, maybe, that people have to work for systems. Where would you rule that? Is it sort of a mix of school and family?
Yeah, I think it's definitely... family is really important as a value in my life, and I came into a very typically middle-class family in America at that time. We won't say exactly what time that was. But they also were, my family was really interested in the arts and education, and supported that, and the idea of personal growth and development, and really supported that for myself and my brother, as well as for themselves when they could. And so I was the girl that walked around life with a book and bumped into a lot of walls on the way. And then I was really able to be part of the arts from a pretty young age. And so between those two kind of bookends of really being involved in the arts and particularly dance and music, but then also, you know, having, as I think many bibliophiles do, this really deep and personal relationship with books and ideas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think those are kind of like the founding parts of how my life and career have developed since then.
It's quite, I guess, refreshing, also heartening to hear this. And other people on the show have also mentioned this thing, have a grounding in, say, literature and reading, learning a musical instrument, being part of a theater or a dance company. Not immediately, maybe, with a future aim in mind, not necessarily knowing that they would like to, say, perform mm-hmm. publicly or become a writer if they're into literature, but for the pure enjoyment of it, if one can say that mm-hmm. in a bit of a capital R romantic way. And it does come through. So the sort of almost starry-eyed, dreamy, in a certain way, even sort of wasting time because you love curling up with a book. And today I know to be really much into Kindles and that sort of thing, to keep mm-hmm. carrying books with you all the time. I'm sort of somehow enjoying even their presence, not only having to actually read them. It's very heartening because in a way it reminds me of sometimes what educators say that, these are ways how to build foundations. And in a way it's a clear example that again, maybe not intentionally, purposely, but that gave you something. It built up something.
Yeah, and I think also when I think about not only literature and reading, but also the arts, there's so many kind of concrete skills and tools that I think it brings. So being able to read and having access to ideas, it really meant I felt very empowered. Of course, as a child, I didn't know that I felt empowered, but you know, as I grew older, I was like, okay, if I don't know something, I can go and find it. Reading is a way of listening to people. And so for me, it was a way to continually learn and listen. And then in the arts, maybe we don't talk about this so much, but when you grow up in the arts, you're both, at least in the United States, you're both encouraged to develop personally, individually, but also you're working as part of a group. In an environment where you're consistently getting feedback, some of it's great, some of it's traumatizing, but it's there. And so I think for me, both of these really tools and not just tools because they were deeply personal ways of expression and listening, have prepared me for, I don't think I could have done any of the other work that I've done in my life or have been as resilient without those tools.
Mm-hmm. You said something, and I must admit, sort of, you know, when you're listening, and sometimes you listen to a radio program, maybe a bit haphazardly, sort of people saying, oh, while in the car or maybe a podcast as a background. But sometimes you hear something and something hooks you. One thing which I kept thinking a little bit about longer, so when I listen to this again, then I see if I missed anything immediately after, about when you said reading as a way of listening to people, that's beautiful because you've got these voices mm-hmm. across ages, across geography, across history, being translated sometimes, mm-hmm. and you're actually exposing yourself to those stories and those narratives. It's something which is quite powerful.
And I know this is like something that's come out in the work and the conversation yesterday, but
when you say yesterday, we're referring to this Arts Council.
Yes,
the event we had on sort of care, well-being of professionals, but also responsibility towards the communities one correct. Works with.
Yes, this idea of co-creation, I think, is also something that that and the idea that imagination can be a renewable resource if there's enough kind of self-care and investment and the ability to fill back up when even in the periods that are very dark. I think those are kind of themes that have emerged, but I think it started with reading, like as a child, because for me, reading is listening, but it is also co-creation because, of course, you're bringing it to life in your own interpretation in your mind. Which is why sometimes when you go to the movie version, you have the diehards who are like, that is not how the book was. Mm. And then you have others who, who feel really inspired by a new interpretation. So those, I think those are themes that were grounded very early, but of course I didn't recognize them at the time.
Mm-hmm. And they echo on, either the stories themselves or even the fact, the process of building those sort of rooms and chambers or palaces in your mind, which then somehow echoes then in other realities. We're already 10 minutes into our conversation, Amy, and before we listen to the first of the two songs, which is every other guest, you almost have a right to choose and to I won't say inflict on our listeners, because they're generally nice pieces, easy listening pieces. But maybe before we do that, to go into your own background, your mm-hmm. first steps in education, what were those? So how did you sort of somehow then put this into practice?
I went into college very excited to start a new life and to really kind of fly away. But at the same time, I was very uncomfortable and nervous and maybe anxious because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And there were so many things that interested me, but at the time, it was still not as embraced as it is now, and it depends on the context you're in, but I had so many interests that made sense to me, but I couldn't understand how to bring them together at that time. And so I went to college undecided, and then gradually found my way into international relations, and then had a dance minor on the side, so I was continuing to dance pretty seriously. And then I, it sounds like a really, like, it was such a meaningful moment, but it was such a simple moment. So I was able to study abroad in France, and I really was someone who, like, came out of the womb being like, I'm going to go to France someday, and no reason, just, and my parents gave me a name with a French spelling, so maybe they have a little bit to blame for that. Mm-hmm. And so we went on a trip, like a field trip to UNESCO. And, you know, as an American, it hadn't really been a big part of my world. We were, at this time, America had been withdrawn from UNESCO, but the person who gave the tour was an American, and so it was someone who had come in the system when we were a member and had stayed. And I just remember walking around and for the first time understanding that, you know, education and culture and science and the arts could all come together in a way with policy. And it was like, oh, there's a place for people like me. And then I was like, oh, but there's not, because we're not a member. And so in kind of one of those very serendipitous, maybe even fateful moments, when I returned, I was full of enthusiasm about, oh my gosh, wow, this exists, because I really was very lost. I was like, I really don't know what I'm going to do at all. And then I was able to work for this think tank that existed at the time in Washington, D.C., where I was doing my studies. And I was able to intern there, and it was called the Center for Arts and Culture. And they were in the process at that time of really mapping out cultural policy in an American context. And I was able to observe and learn and work with some really incredible people who were really dedicated to trying to build a field at that time. And it really was one of those things where you can look back and see the pattern. And I really think of my career as like a mosaic piece of art with little pieces, where sometimes the pieces get chipped, sometimes they're replaced, sometimes they're not. Mm. But at the end, it's making something beautiful, but I don't always see the pattern till later, if at all. And then it really was one of those things that I never could have planned in a million years. It just was a perfect kind of timing, person, circumstance.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things which stands out from these type of narratives and episodes and experiences which are narrated on this series are, in a way, we might not know where we're going to end up, not even close to that. But the fact that somehow you balance out what starts growing on you, mm-hmm. whatever field of studies that is, or interests.
Mm-hmm.
And while doing that, sort of making yourself available, sort of saying yes, trying to connect, in certain circumstances, if one is a stagiaire or an intern, call it what you will, sort of going the extra mile, staying on a bit, there's sort of this feeling that it pays off, but not that only from a sort of remunerative or instrumental way. It pays off sort of in terms of what you gain as a person out of it, and throughout these moments on this program, you've already sort of mentioned that important social element, where on the one hand you're developing yourself, but you're doing that in connection with others.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I remember at the time it was kind of a new field in the United States, and you know, I read a book somewhere, and at that time I was really struggling trying to find my path, and I thought it was really important that I would know. And over time I've let go of that. But I went to both my parents and I asked them kind of what they thought their mission was in life. And they both had worked in nonprofits, so the idea of mission was a very present one in our household. And they were really thoughtful about it. And they wrote me each a letter that I still have about what they thought their mission was, and how they felt that they were like serving something greater. And, you know, if I had to distill my two parents down, it was like my father was a professional Boy Scout working in the nonprofit, and my mother was a minister. And so it was like, okay, be prepared, but have faith.
And when you say minister, in the religious sense.
In the religious sense, yeah.
That's something we sort of really refer to in that way here in Malta. But yes, a religious minister.
Yeah, and a Protestant faith. And so that was helpful because it was like, okay, I have work to do myself, like to help, you know, figure out what I'm supposed to do and to keep doing it. But there was also like having a lot of faith, like it's going to work out. And, I think you have to believe that, and you have to have that imagination. And because I had people at that time in my life be like, what is cultural policy? You're never going to get a job. There's no future for that. Like, and I just really felt called to it and kept saying, no, but I know this person and they're doing this work. And I know this person and they're doing this work. And being willing to kind of be comfortable with ambiguity, although I would never have said it that way. And I was working, you know, multiple jobs at the time just to kind of, you know, make it all work. But in retrospect, again, like sometimes you can see these little nuggets and patterns all the way through. Mm-hmm. So that was a big part of that, I think.
And somehow, since you mentioned that mosaic image before, which is very powerful as well. So if you were sort of chipping away and piecing it together, and then something sort of maybe blows a few away and then they get replenished. It was quite diverse and wide because the experience in Paris with UNESCO. And then we'll come to this in the second part of our interview today on Min Campus Elihor. Somehow sort of that local and global helped to keep things within a wide perspective. So maybe even if the things weren't maybe very promising in one area, somehow your data bank of experiences and your connections could always point you in another direction to keep the faith, as Bon Jovi would have it. But we're not going to listen to Bon Jovi, at least I think, because I know the first track.
Although maybe I wish I'd picked Bon Jovi now.
mind you, we can always slip it in somehow. But we're going to listen to the first piece that Amy Fullman, my guest, chose today, which somehow will take us down this road of connections. So what would it be?
I will admit that this was the hardest part of preparing for this. And so the first one is a recent song. It's kind of a pop song. It's called Better When I'm Dancing, and it's by Meghan Trainor. And I really like this song because for me personally, I feel better when I'm dancing. And when life is harder, it's something I know that if I do it myself, that I will feel better. But sometimes it's too much to get there. But like, I can see when I'm really thriving because I'm either actually doing dance itself, which of course, I was a very intense part of my life for 20 years. And I think if you're someone that continues through the arts, but doesn't steps away from their main art discipline and practicing it at a certain level, it's a little bit of a grief. It's a little bit of a loss. It's a little bit of a breakup in some ways. And And so I've kind of had to find different ways to keep that in my life in a different level. And also I've really become more and more interested over my career and the connections between arts and health and environment. And I've done some training kind of like energy work. And you feel better when energy moves. So it's like I really like the song. I like the different kind of layers of the song, that it's singable, that I and it's the thing that I play when I wake up in the morning. I'm like, really, today? We have to do things today? And it really, it gets me at least moving towards the coffee.
Mm-hmm. Listen to this, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it and get them moving as well, wherever they are, whatever they're doing. Today, Amy Fullman from the US, but one of the people I guess would really qualify as a global citizen, even from your experiences, which you've narrated to me, to us on Main Campus Alihor today, but there's much, much more to come our way. And that song somehow added to our energy, to our enjoyment, mm-hmm. of in a way, sort of moving and trying different things and keeping the flow of energy going. Amy, in the first part, you've told us quite a little bit about not only your first steps linking the professional with the personal, which gives a very sort of full picture of the way a career, a profession can develop. But you've also hinted at other areas related maybe to the thinking, to the sort of philosophical thinking about it, other inspirations and how they came about, and also the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's really natural. Maybe we don't talk about it enough to say you might have sort of started off in a direction, then had to rework your way. Many people, as you know, because of other things which come up in life, it could be having to take care of family members, having to move, to travel, maybe to sort of rupture one's studies in a certain area, and you mentioned sort of dance in your way, which is sort of very physical and very committed. It needs a big commitment. It's not just something you sit down and do. It's a lot of years of training. But it could be any skill which we sort of invest ourselves in, and then somehow, because of time, of age, of other things, need to adapt, rather than abandon, or rather than sort of just close up and bury. And in your case, these flows of energy have kept going in multiple directions. And then the second part of our program today, in Campus Elihor, I'd like you to tell us sort of about maybe the more recent period of your work, because what you seem to have planted in the beginning did start to lead to fruition, to give some fruit. Not only in your work in the US, mm-hmm. but even elsewhere. And you've done a bit of work in Europe, and not even only Europe. You've gone beyond. So I wonder whether you can tell us a little bit about that, because it's not a common story, the way things panned out.
I'll try. I kind of kept continuing on the path of bringing together this international relations part, which was, of course, also rooted in being curious about the world and people. And you know, I've just really always loved cultures, and I love looking at them across cultures and within cultures, and over time, and kind of all of the through the framework of diversity, although I didn't really understand that at the time. And I was in this position where I was learning from so many wonderful people who were also so generous in mentoring and supporting both myself and other young people around me. And I think that's a really important thing. And even as a young woman, I had really important mentors that were both women, which was really important. So you could see yourself and look at their choices and how you wanted to kind of construct your own way of being, but also some really, really important men mentors as well. And I think you need both. And I was really, you know, looking at, okay, well, what do I think is going to be relevant in 20 years? And at the time I was like, okay, for the things that really sat with me were, my country is going to be a majority minority country by 2030. So really had grown up with people from all over the world who were, you know, first generation or even had come over with their families, because they were like many of them are on H-1B visas. So my high school was like a model UN. And so
So it's sort of this diverse.
Yeah.
In fact, even before you mentioned this thing of minority majority.
Yeah.
Sort of that the most people in society would be coming from communities one would consider as a minority. And
yeah.
In the case of the US, not sort of white, but and everything else.
And shifting, right? Because, you know, in during my lifetime, my country will not be majority white anymore. And I was really lucky to be during, I think, those formative years, like involved and exposed and able to, you know, form lasting friendships with people from all over the world. And it really helped fuel those interests. So I was really interested in culture and still am interested in cultural diversity and then cultural diplomacy, which now, you know, I've continued along the spectrum to really think about that more in terms of cultural relations. But at the time, it was very much framed that way. And then kind of cultural development, which is a kind of a broad area for me about both building capacity for the arts and culture, but also thinking about how does that field continue to develop itself, but also interact with other fields. And that interdisciplinary work has always been important to me, but I think it's really starting to pay off now and materialize, because we're much more open to, and the solutions that we need really, if we're thinking about the role of arts and culture in society, no one sector can solve it, and every sector needs to be part of it. So, but yes, I pursued those, and there was always this international vein to it. And I've been very lucky that I was able to live abroad several times in a variety of contexts. So I was able to live in Canada and, you know, somehow as an American work at Department of Canadian Heritage for a period of time, which was a really, really wonderfully fruitful time in my adult life. And then I've worked in the UK for a while in an academic setting, and throughout it, it was not only the work opportunities, but in several cases, you know, I've tried things and it didn't work out the way I thought it was going to. And in many cases, they were really disappointing. And sometimes felt like miscarriages, right? Because when you put a lot of creative energy into something and it doesn't work out, like, we don't talk about it, but it's hard. And and you grieve it. You have to grieve it. But at the same time, there's always these wonderful people, like-minded people, soul-minded people that came into my life and made it so much richer. And so this last trip, I think, is really indicative of that. You know, I'm coming out of, we're all coming, I feel like a groundhog where I'm putting my head out of COVID for a minute to see if it's going to last. And maybe I have to go back in to the tunnel. But, you know, this trip is really, I was able to go back to the UK and spend time with my research partner, Carter Figuera, who I know you've also interviewed.
Yes, that's right.
And we've been able to do work together for the last 10 years. And it's we're just, you know, it's kind of snowballing in a wonderful way every year. It gets better every year. And, you know, I'm here and we've met through the U40 group, which
in fact has also been a great reservoir for ideas and even guests on this show, because it's one of those networks linked to UNESCO, which over the past, at least in my case, I think around 15 years, have really opened doors and made contacts and made friendships with it.
And I think that's it. Is like, I think U40 is really this wonderful, really kind of almost unique. It's everything you want a network to be when you design it from a program perspective, but the weaving of the professional and the inspiration, but also the personal, because I think we expect so much that people are going to be linear and that we're just going to pick ourselves up and do things even when it's hard. And yes, of course we're going to do that, but you need support, and I have found the U40 network, and it's a big network, to be a really special safe place to explore those transitions and that are kind of the meat of life. The transitions are the meat of life, but they're the scariest part. And you can't do it alone, and I come from a country where sometimes we really expect that self-resiliency is like kind of a part of the imprint. But you can't do it alone. And learning that you don't have to do it alone, and then also learning who you're going to trust, which is also that part of cultural relations. It is a learning process, and it takes time to like allow yourself to be vulnerable. But those friendships, when you develop them and they're true, they really like they can last a lifetime. And so then after this, I'll go to France and I'll spend time with the family, who is like a second family to me that I lived with when I was a student. And so it really like, this is one of those moments where, you can see the pattern.
Yeah.
And you realize all these small moments and opportunities and choices, you know, have added up to something greater than you could have ever imagined.
Amy, before we stop for the second time to listen to the second tune, I just want to say the U40 we mentioned, we referred to, sort of meant under 40, because a few years ago we were all under 40. And sometimes we joke, so we could switch the U to an O now.
Yeah,
the over 40.
Over 40.
Because we're all sort of moving on, but very, very gracefully, I would say, and very sort of creatively and productively in different ways. Weaving out, you used this word before, sort of new networks, new relationships. Amy, let's listen to, let's catch our breath and listen to the second tune, and let's admit with our listeners that we researched also how to say this name, because while it's a very popular tune, the name isn't. So let me go first. We're going to listen to Israel Kamakawiwole. And that's the best I can do.
Better than what I can probably do.
What are we going to listen from him, and why?
We're going to listen to, this is a Hawaiian deceased artist, and he had a rendition that was quite popular, you know, over 10 years ago, maybe in the 90s.
Already? Wow.
Well, I might be wrong about that date. We might need to, like, check that.
It feels like, wow.
Yeah, and he did a compilation of an older song from The Wizard of Oz, which I really hate that musical. I know I will be killed on the street for saying that, but it's never been my favorite for some reason. I'm not sure why. But it's over the rainbow, but it's a mix that feeds into What a Wonderful World. And the reason I like this song so much is that I really love to see innovation, and I really love hybrids, and the way that these two songs are brought together is seamless, and it's such a different kind of sound than the original piece of music. And I always liked that song. I don't know why. I guess I'm a bit of a dreamer, and I really like this idea that you can dream about something even if you're in a difficult place. And you know, maybe there's that also thing of like, there's no place like home, and I'm someone who's always been searching for home. So maybe there's like a bit of that too. And yeah, so there's a romantic sense to it, and everyone who knows me knows I am definitely a romantic. But also, when things are hard, I think there is that part of like, if you stop, there is beauty in chaos. But you have to look for it. It's not something we naturally do.
Maybe it will come looking for you, but somehow you need to be open.
And I think intentional. Like, I had a period, coming out of my 30s and to... out of my 20s and my 30s, where there was a year where like literally everything fell apart. It just was one of those years, and I had to rebuild. And so I really had to be intentional about finding, okay, what is the one beautiful thing today? What is like, and the secondary question to that was, okay, what is the most meaningful thing I can do today? And it's usually not the thing that is the top priority on your work list. It's usually a conversation with someone that you met randomly or whatever, but that's it. Is like, even when things are hard, it is still a wonderful world if you want to look for it. So I like this idea of juxtaposing this idea that yes, you can, you need the vision, you need to be able to take yourself out, you know, with your imagination to something better. And if you can't imagine something better, then it's really hard to walk towards it. But at the same time, you have to be rooted in the present a little bit, because I can float off to the clouds if I allow myself. You know, you have to be rooted in the present, and you have to really look around for the beauty that's right there at the same time. So I really like it, and it's very mellow, and it's I just find it really beautiful.
Okay, let's listen to it then.
To myself, what a wonder. clouds of white and the brightness of day. I like the dark and think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people passing by.
So we're leaving the dreamy Hawaiian wavy tunes, which Amy led us to. Amy Fullman, my guest today on Min Campus Alihor. Amy, we're down to the last 10 minutes or so. So as happens, sort of one starts sort of weaving the story and then unraveling stories within the story, and then whoop, because of the format of the program, we're almost at the end. However, I'd like to sort of keep progressing through this meandering career path that you are sharing with us. And I'm sure our listeners will have appreciated. Because maybe in the last 10 minutes, we can look a little bit as well at what all this you've done somehow has led you, maybe not naturally, in some sort of preordained way, although there's a lot of faith and a lot of sort of passion and vision in what you described to us. But in your role as Director, National Resource Center for Creative Forces, there's a particular element which links you to the program of the National Endowment for the Arts, and in particular the Military Healing Arts Network, which every time I hear you talk about it, always stops me sort of in my tracks in a way, because I still find it so interesting to have an arts program linked to the healing process, well-being, and all that, and care and self-care and preservation within the military context. So briefly, could you tell us sort of what that is about?
Of course, I would love to. I'm working currently on a project along with a lot of other really talented people called Creative Forces, and it's a cooperative agreement, which is a very governmental kind of term, between the National Endowment for the Arts in the United States with our Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs. And it places creative arts therapists, with, you know, art or music or dance or writing therapy at clinical sites, which are military hospitals throughout the country. And the creative arts therapists are working specifically through this program with individuals that have PTSD or a TBI, which is a traumatic brain injury. And it's a really exciting project because for someone like me who really believes it's important for our field to develop in terms of our research methods and in conveying both our intrinsic and extrinsic impact, it's a really wonderful cross-disciplinary program that has a really applied aspect to it and whose intention is healing. And I find it an incredibly inspirational thing to get up and do every day. And so it also has a community component, and they have grown into a grants program, which is actually competing right now for the first time. And with the idea that the clinical component, the creative arts therapists are, you know, they're clinically certified. They work in a very specific way, and they're starting to do more and more research around it, which is fantastic. So they're moving up into, in the future, probably randomly controlled trials and things we don't usually do in the arts. Whereas on the community side, it's really wonderful because they're also creating programming that specifically addresses the same populations, what we call military-connected populations, which includes active service members, veterans, their families, and caregivers. So it's really about the whole health is something we're starting to talk a lot about. And so it's about the whole health of the person, but it's also about their family and their connections, because that with the idea that like we heal in community. Right? Healing by yourself, there's certain things you need to do, self-care, there's certain things you can only confront your own demons, but to really heal, you have to be part of a community, and this really takes that into practice. And so on the community level, There are also arts programs that are designed to look at specific outcomes that are different than the clinical outcomes, but still allows that allows someone to also move from a more clinical treatment if they started there, which is a very different kind of work, into continuing art practices in the community. And that clinic to community transition is something we talk a lot about and, you know, we'll be doing further investment in. And so for me, it's really been, it's been a thread in my career, but it's something that's really actualized now. And I really love working with students, and teaching has always been part of, like, something I think I'm really part of my purpose. So in my role, I'm helping translate these impacts, these ideas, these resources into things that can be shared publicly to fuel not only policy, but also be resources for researchers and practitioners so that we can really learn. And one of the core values that was set in place by the director of this project, Bill O'Brien, is that we're a learning organization. And so the idea that we're wanting to learn from ourselves and then share that, I really do believe in that value. And it's a really exciting time to see this program grow, because it's now coming out of its 10th year, but it's really accelerating in terms of its growth and so then impact.
Mm-hmm. With this, you've propelled us even into the future, because it's something which is actual, current, growing. Mm-hmm. I imagine sort of being addressed through various angles, because you've got a multidisciplinary approach. Although necessary, the nature of the beast is that. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I really want to sort of just end on a note of further looking forward. And it's hard to do it within a couple of minutes. But do you see this particular field you're operating in sort of grow in a way that might even have even more impact on other communities? So starting from the military, their families, their communities, could it even expand further to bring in other members of different communities?
Yeah, I really think so. One of the things I also always told my students is that most, from my perspective, many of the jobs that I have had in the last 10 years didn't exist 10 years ago. And the jobs that are going to be there for the future don't exist now. I can't predict exactly, but if I had to bet, I would say that arts and health, that connection between arts and health, whether it include the military or not, is something that is going to continue to develop throughout my lifetime. And I think there will be more jobs specifically related to that, which asks us to then, how do we really prepare people for that? Because it's a sensitive place. And, you know, I think we also do want to carry in those values of, like, do no harm. And we have to recognize that arts and culture is an incredibly powerful tool. And I know it's very uncomfortable to talk about it like that, but it can be used for good or it can be used for not good. And so being cognizant of that, I think is really important. The other place that my research has taken me most recently that I think has a future forward path is around, I've done a lot of work with Carla on cultural relations and climate change.
Yes, and yes. In fact, that came up during the program with Carla Figueira.
Yeah, and so that's another place where I think it's really imperative that we are using all the tools in everyone's arsenal to co-create, right, solutions as best we can. And I know that sometimes it feels like a drop in the bucket, and or maybe that, you know, especially if you have one actor that's very powerful, committing to the same goals, it can be very frustrating. But again, I think that's where that faith has to come in, because great change happens either incrementally or in a crisis situation. So why wouldn't we continue to develop every tool in our arsenal to be ready for the moment where it can make a difference? And I think that's that everyday kind of, how do we get through the grind part?
It's a lesson for every day.
Yeah. But that's another area I think has a real kind of future. And in general, I think there's a trend right now that arts and culture, not just to be used instrumentally, but should and can have a really important role in
in societal discussions and in helping create solutions for societal problems. It doesn't mean in any way that we shouldn't acknowledge and protect the space for pure cultural artistic expression, because not every artistic expression needs to be connected to or in service of something else.
Fair enough.
So that distinguishing between process and product for me has become really, really important, and important to honor both of them and not just be oriented towards arts and culture in the service
one
of something else.
That's right.
Amy, I think on that really, really succinct, concise, but broad reflection on the ongoing and ever-changing values that sort of instill themselves in the work of professionals like yourself in the field of culture and the arts through policy, through management, through practice. And maybe even for Maltese, local, European audience, always a bit surprisingly from the US, because many times we just simply think there are no arts and cultural policies and everyone's sort of left to their own devices. And you've really corrected that impression, which somehow remains, which somehow persists.
It's a whole other conversation.
Oh, yes.
I can go on about that for days.
Yes, we'll have to do that another time, I'm sure, and there will be occasions. But in the meantime, I thank you very much, Amy, for being with me on the show today.
Thank you so much, Carson. It's always a great pleasure to converse with you and to think through ideas. And I'm very happy to be here, and I hope that this was encouraging and empowering in some way for someone. And keep on dancing.
Thank you very much. You will.
Nittama l-intervista ma' Amy Fullman. Uġbitkom, kienet interessanti, kienem ħafna spunti li wieħed jista' joqgħod jaħseb fuqhom u jarbel, u nittama li kien għadu miegħi wkoll il-ġimgħa d-dieħla għal programm ieħor fis-sensiela minn campus għal ieħor saħħit.